Hello and welcome to Scott B Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by Billy Billion from The Conspirators.
Hi.
And so we've got you on today to talk about the Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex.
You got it right.
Yeah, I
tried to think of the longest possible title I could. That's where I ended up.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the most stressful part of my week now is the beginning of the episode where I have to, like, remember all the details of a thing. Yeah. The last episode, I, like, just had them introduce themselves.
Because I was like, you're like,
why don't you tell me everything that you're doing?
Yeah, right, exactly.
We're here with da-da-da. Yeah.
No, give it a shot. I will shake my head admonishingly if you get it wrong, and then you'll, like, pretend you stumbled on it.
No, there's been multiple times where I've butchered it, and then we've gone, stop, start over. Which is great about not doing it live, which I think is a fun thing about our show. But cool. Yeah, so we got in touch with you by Rose Freeman.
Rose.
By way of Rose, our first ever recurring guest on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Love you, Rose.
Yeah, she's great. She's good people.
Rose is the best.
Mm-hmm. but she told us about this event that you've been putting on, and it's really cool conceptually. Would you mind talking a little bit about it?
I would love to talk about it. In fact, that's why I came here today.
Weird. Cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, the Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex. It has roots in just kind of the album of Jesus Christ Superstar, which I loved as a child, and I found out hundreds of my friends felt the same way about it as I kind of posited this idea a couple years ago. Also kind of in the Do-It-Yourself Messiah, where you go and you sing a piece of music that everybody knows. And
that connection just dawned on
ding
me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Genuinely, when I first saw DIY Messiah, I immediately thought it was a Messiah performance. Okay, there's a difference between our... I've told you this already.
The cat is playing an amazing game of rock soccer.
Yeah, no, she's got something going.
She really knows. She, like, knows when we've started recording.
Yeah, no, that was amazing.
Your vocal tone takes on another quality, and then I'll start playing.
Mm-hmm.
There she goes.
She's like, oh, you guys are being...
And you can't catch me.
All right.
Whatever. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Anyway, yes, yeah. So the Do-It-Yourself Messiah connection is also part of it, because there's, you know, you can just put on the record and sing along. It's just as entertaining. Because everyone, you know, sings the, "Our mind is clearer now." You know, it was like singing all together, and, you know.
Yeah.
And I had always had this kind of side project, you know, in my theater work of doing kind of curated evenings, either vaudeville or performance or both, usually both, that's best for me, but in bars where people who are dancers or people who are burlesque artists or people who are monologuists or whatever just sort of throw a thing together.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a structure for that. I basically put the word out looking for people to perform, and people will either sing or they'll do a dumb show or they'll do whatever, either of the song or as a tribute to the song, but that lasts as long as the cut is on the album. So you have 3 minutes and 47 seconds to do your tribute to this. Some people just bring the karaoke track and sing along, you know, and just perform for their friends because they've always dreamed of playing Judas or whatever. And it turns into this really cool salon where half the people are there performing, the other half are there just to sing along, and another, I guess that would make three halves, a third are there just to watch. And, you know, we bring out wine for the Last Supper, and we hand out chocolate bunnies for the communion, you know, so it turns into this great kind of, you know, Easter thing. Non-religious observance of a Christian holiday.
That sounds really fun.
And so you've found that, like, the album itself has almost like a cult following outside of the movie, or maybe not directly outside of it, but you know what I mean.
In theater people especially, you know, and performance people and music people, because it's you never get a chance to do it. I mean, they just did it at, what was it, Theo Ubique did the kind of stripped down version of it. Now there's a big one going on in Aurora, I think, soon.
And the Chicago Lyric is doing it.
And the Lyric is doing it, yes. Yeah. So it's a giant all of a sudden thing.
That's going
to
be
interesting to hear operatic voices try it. That was going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Unless they're just putting it on.
Well, that's kind of the thing,
I just did the quotes thing with my fingers.
No, fair. Like, I've said things about that'll probably not get me hired about the Lyric before on this podcast, but, like, I think they do great things, and I don't know if their theater, they're like, musical theater is one of them, and like I'm curious.
No, that's not entirely true because their production of Carousel was absolutely beautiful. Yeah. I think that their weak spot is when they try to like do the contemporary kind of like rock opera stuff,
mm-hmm.
because they got the opera, they just don't really have the rock.
They don't really, well, they don't have the audience for rock either. Their audience isn't there to see that, and so, and probably I would imagine the acoustics are weird in there for electrical instruments.
I could talk about Opera House's acoustics forever because actually the Lyric Opera has terrible acoustics for opera.
Oh,
the Ryan Center, or not the, is that the, what the stage, the house of the hall is called? Because do you know the Auditorium Theater?
Yeah, sure.
That one is actually perfect acoustically.
Yeah.
You can be on one side of the hall and you can like whisper to someone standing next to you, and then a person is, if they're standing like sitting directly across from you on the other side of the hall, can hear every word of your conversation.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Louis Sullivan was a genius. He was the architect. I happen to know that.
Nice. I'm going to actually try to remember that because I only remember the facts about the acoustics and nothing about the actual details. So that's really cool.
It's like it was a masterpiece.
Yeah, but then the Lyric, this building is just, was built as like an addendum to the office buildings.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In getting back to Jesus Christ Superstar, my high school friends and I love Jesus Christ Superstar. We had this friend Adam who would always, he could sing both Jesus and Judas.
Well, if you're the right kind of rock tenor, then you can sing both those parts.
Yeah, and he was...
I can sing neither of those parts.
Well, he was one of those, like, rock tenors who could just, like, absolutely... And so we would just, like, hang out in various people's basements and just, like, blast along to it. And actually,
and that's kind of where this comes from.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And in seventh grade, I auditioned for my middle school musical. I had my ukulele out and I sang I Don't Know How to Love Him while accompanying myself on ukulele when I was 12.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
That's a
lovely
did you get story. It?
I did not.
They just didn't get it. You know?
No, they didn't.
They didn't want a 12-year-old Mary Magdalene?
No, it's so weird. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
It's not that I object to her profession. just quoting the musical there.
Yeah. Well, cool. So you were saying that it's been going for 3 years, but this is the second time that
Second time we've done it. Yeah, we did it in 2015 on Easter. And then later that year, toward the end of the year, we did a DIY Tommy, where we followed Tommy track by track,
and had
guest performers do that. Did that at the Corn Conservatory in North Center, and then we're back doing the Easter thing this time with the JCS DIYMC.
Mm-hmm. You've got to the point where it rolls off your tongue really easily.
If I'm gonna, I have to own the name. I can't just sort of.
Well, I mean, like the joke in there is too good not to have the whole thing. So I think you know, as long as it is, it works out.
It's the world's longest portmanteau, I guess.
Are there like fan favorites that people that saw it the last time? Are...
Well, fan favorites. It's hard to say because it's one night, so you don't get a lot of feedback. Except everyone has a great time. It's funny. There's two kinds of favorites. There's people who are applying to do. A lot of people will gravitate toward the same song when they decide they want to do the show. Pilot's Dream and I Don't Know How to Love Him are always like.
There's
a competition for those two songs. Everybody wants to play Herod. Everybody wants to play Pilot because it's easy just to sneak in and just do a cameo like that. You don't have to commit to the Judas or the Jesus. But this year we lucked out and two people are just wanting to say, I want to play Judas all night. It's like, okay, great.
That was going to be my next question is like, do you basically cast it then?
Off-ish. I mean, I kind of curate it. It's, some people are, you know, you got to get through the whole album. And some of it are sing-alongs and some of it are, there's not really, you know, the chorus would just sing the chorus part and then there's nobody singing the lead. So we all sort of sing it or we whatever. But if someone steps forward and grabs the mic and starts singing along, then it's, okay, great. Now we have the call and response of the Judas singing one thing, Jesus singing the other. And that really worked out well the first time. Our Aidan McCormick just sort of came out of nowhere. He came in because he wanted to sing Gethsemane because he was developing a performance piece based on it. And ended up like singing, well, here, sing this one, come on. And so we kind of, you know, he kind of played Jesus that night, which was kind of cool. But nobody played Judas, except it was weird because an audience member was there to see his wife perform as one of the priests, which was David Serta playing Caiaphas from, he's from Hell in a Handbag Productions, a notorious camp drag theater company. So he came in and did his Joan Crawford as Caiaphas show, which was amazing. And one of his co-priests, Caitlin Jackson, her husband, was there to see it, who also happens to be a really talented musical tenor and knows every word of Jesus Christ Superstar. So he just sort of stood up in his The Flash t-shirt and just sang all the Judas parts. So, you know, that's part of it is finding the voices to do it, but also just in the sing-along part too. It's like someone's got to sing that part.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you said that some of it are just like karaoke tracks.
Yeah.
Some of it are like tributes. Like from the first year that it happened, like what were some of the more out there performances? Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine, Sasha Warren, did a spoken word piece to the crucifixion. So she basically, you know, she had a thing where she just kind of mock crucified herself and gave monologue about her relationship with men through her childhood and all that kind of thing. Blew me away while the crucifixion song is playing, and she timed it perfectly to the song.
Oh my God.
That was amazing. I mentioned David Serta doing Caiaphas in 6'4" drag. It was amazing. Who else? The DIY Tommy, we had Molly Brennan, who's like a really well-known physical actor in Chicago, and she did a clown suicide to I'm a Sensation. So we've had some pretty good, interesting stuff. My song, first time around, I sang Herod's song, and the attire for the night, it's biblical glam. So I'm dressed up in my glam outfit with my David Bowie wig, and so I sang Herod's song in kind of a slow David Bowie voice to just a drone keyboard behind it.
Biblical glam.
It turns into this thing. My friend Sid and his wife did Pilot's Dream as Elmer Fudd and a rabbit. So she dressed up as the Easter Bunny for the night, and she was handing out candy. And then he's saying, "I dreamed I met a Galilean," playing on ukulele, and hunted the rabbit in the song. So it's that kind of thing, you know. So people have done stuff that's counterpoint. People have just sort of sung for the love of it. So it's been, those are some.
That sounds so fun. So what we're currently trying to figure out just in our lives is what the hell we're doing for Easter.
Because
on Easter Sunday, we work.
Yeah, you're working all day till about noon, and then you're done, right?
Yes.
And we Easter vigil the night before, too.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So,
We won't get home till like 2 probably.
2 a.m.?
Right?
Midnight is when you have to start, right? Like all
no,
the lights are
I,
out.
I think it starts
think,
at 11
no,
and goes
No, I
to,
think that this church, I think they started at 10, and so we're going to be out by like midnight,
I think,
which is really nice. At least it's not.
Catholics like make you wait till midnight.
We do that for Christmas Eve.
We
get home at 2 a.m. and then inevitably one of us has to canter it for the 9 a.m. Mass.
Nice.
So we get home at 2 a.m. We wake up at 6:45. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Sanger's life.
Mm-hmm.
But so we were invited to my aunt's house. And I can talk about this openly because I am positive my aunt does not listen to my podcast.
Yeah.
But like,
it's a podcast.
Woman, Central Illinois, shops at Aldi exclusively for the deal.
And like, we'll go on Facebook and like Skittles and
like the corporate pages.
Yeah, for the coupons. And if you like identify, if you like, hey, I really like your lamp, then it'll be, it'll not be mailed to you. It'll be like, oh, I got that for $7. It was on sale at Pier 1. Great deals. And I'm like, great. It's a nice lamp. All right. Anyway, she invited us over for Easter. And we're like trying to decide, like, do we do the family thing or do we do something that's more fun? Like that.
You should really come to the Do-It-Yourself. Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex. It is a night. It's a really, the best way to describe it is like a gathering. It's like everybody comes together and just has a party and has a blast with a structure, and that has entertainment value, either as a performer. I mean, you know, as singers who know the musical, you would totally be blasting the thing out and it would be awesome. Yeah.
That sounds really fun. Well, because with holidays, I think that as we get older, we're kind of living in a world of, like, you know, family that we make for ourselves.
Right.
And so I think that having things that happen, because nobody really does anything on, like, Christmas night or Easter night.
Right.
Except, like, sit and feel obligated to be with family.
Yeah. And watch or not watch the sporting event that's on.
Right. Exactly.
Especially with Easter, too. Easter's the one that really...
Like, Easter's done by 4.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, well, this day is set aside for family.
Everything's closed.
Exactly. So I think it's cool, the idea of kind of like this crazy fun...
And it really has evolved into kind of a chosen family event too, especially with my dear friend Rose Freeman, and Sid and other people who are involved with it, who have been doing it now and who have kind of come together to form the Conspirators. That it's you know, you're going through the actual story from the Book of John that is Jesus Christ Superstar. Now, whether you're religious or not, it doesn't really matter, but there's a story arc to that happens in the evening. And so naturally there's a supper, and then naturally there's a tragedy, and then, you know, naturally there's a big celebration at the end, you know, that you do on that particular day.
Yeah.
So it just kind of turns into that. And that's a lot really of people fun. Returning this year, our technician Sebi, who's the savior of the whole thing, no pun intended, savior of the whole thing with his sound mixing capability and all his equipment. He just sort of trucks it all in and sets it up. And Rose, you know, delivered a benediction last year, or last time we did it, during the John 2543, whatever the name of that song is, John 1965. Anyway, the last kind of, like, weird tonal song that, while Jesus is just up there dying. So, you know, she's coming back this year, and Aiden's coming back, and we're going to sing Jesus again just for fun. And it's just this motley group of people who just come together to do this thing. So it is kind of like a family event.
Yeah.
It feels like it.
But it's more fun.
It's more fun.
There's less baggage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no arguments. Except the ritual argument between Judas and Jesus.
Well,
and
right. Thing, you know. But that's like choreographed, so it's
right.
fine.
And, you know, how often do you get to call somebody a jaded Mandarin?
Not nearly enough.
A family fight.
Not nearly enough. So I want to talk a little bit about the Conspirators.
Oh, sure.
So tell us, like, how your group got started.
So I do non-equity theater in Chicago, and I've been doing it for decades now. And I used to have my own company, and then that kind of burned me out. And now I work with, I'm just a newly minted member of the Factory Theater up on Howard Street with a show running now called Born Ready. go see it. Mm-hmm. But my more edgy artistic sensibilities weren't being satisfied by working in other people's theaters directing their shows. And so I kind of put the idea of the Conspirators together for the show we did last fall, the Resistible Rise of Herr Helmut Drumpf. loosely based on the Brecht play Arthur Uwe, but really all about the election cycle we were going through at the time. And we did it in a style we call The Style, which is like a neo-commedia dell'arte style, high energy, really kind of grotesque makeup, and really just, you know, definitely not the Steppenwolf kind of theater. Mm-hmm. It's hard to describe. I decided that process was good, and I'd already been doing the DIY, the JCS DIY MCs. And so I kind of put those ideas together. There's kind of a performance art side, and there's kind of a theater-y performance art, and there's performance art-y theater going on. And then I decided, you know, we're doing kind of very subversive political stuff, I guess. And so the idea of calling it the Conspirators kind of came to me. But also, it's been my belief for decades now also that to conspire is really Latin to breathe together.
Mm.
And so there is this kind of, I guess, subversive, holistic message behind the whole thing, where we're coming together, we're looking each other in the eye, and we're making art for a purpose. And maybe that purpose for the, like, for the Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah complex, maybe that purpose is about community and about chosen family and about celebrating that you are artists and that kind of thing. And maybe it's about, you know, toppling the horrible, horrible regime at the top of your country. You know, it depends on what that is. But the idea of the conspirators is kind of that. It's a loosely based thing. There's no meetings. There's no managing director, you know, there's that structure is not really there. It's just that we come, when we want to put something up, we kind of come together and we do it. Mm. So that's kind of the concept behind that.
Cool.
Yeah. So what, it's new, it's fresh.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. was the Herr Drumpf show your first performance with the, or as the
Conspirators? As a group, yeah, it's the first thing we called the Conspirators, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And it was really well received. We didn't even invite the critics, and they came anyway, and they loved it. So I was just like,
so okay. Bonus.
We were only planning on 6 performances. We did 2 weekends right before the election, and we said, oh, you know, if we get 25 people in here, we'll be happy. You know, we'll pay everybody back and blah 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 blah. And it was jammed. The place held 35, and we had over 40 every night, and just on word of mouth and Facebook. We had bought no advertising. We sent out a press release, but really, it was, you know, we didn't invite critics. It's not Jeff Award eligible or anything like that. And it jammed every night, and we were giving away Chinga Tupelo beer.
That's amazing. We know the graphic designer to that.
Our friend Zach designed that can. We had him on the show.
Oh my God.
I went to elementary, middle, and high school with him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's amazing because the guy who did our poster does all the graphics for Half Acre. Weird.
What?
Anyway.
That's awesome. Man, yeah. Beer companies know how to brand.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. They have to. They're all about brand until you taste it.
Yeah.
Well, I bought this wine because the label looks attractive.
Mm-hmm. I've done that.
Is Half Acre they also do Off Color?
I don't know. No, Off Color. We're going to talk about breweries now.
Well, shout out Emma Cox, because she's the one that introduced us to Off Color.
So Off Color, they don't have a home brewery. They just travel around to their friends.
Oh, that's right.
They just travel around. They, like, ask their friends who have breweries if they can borrow their equipment, and then they sell their beer.
Yeah. Wow. So it's kind of, it's like a guerrilla brewery.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
And they did one.
Pop-up brewery, I guess.
Yeah.
They did, like, a field museum brew. Which apparently had dinosaur bones in it.
That's not true.
It was pretty good, though. It might be.
I think Emma was lying.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, well.
I think Emma was fucking with us.
Maybe it was, like, on the box, which wouldn't lie. We're not.
Advertisers never lie.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Is it real fake news or fake news that there's dinosaur bones in the beer?
Speaking of Facebook,
real fake real news.
Speaking of Facebook and advertising, we told you this would be informal, and fake news. I opened Facebook today, and a thing popped up saying like, we're gonna help figure out what's real news and what's fake news. And so you can go through, and if you determine that a story that someone has posted is not real, you can mark it as fake
news. You can mark it as fake news, that's right.
Yeah.
Boy, I feel bad for The Onion now. Every single one of their stories is going to be registered as fake news.
There was a period of time when fake news was first the thing, that people would post like 10 top fake news sites, and The Onion would always be on there. And I was like, you know that's for some old, like not necessary, that was ageist of me, but like somebody's grandma.
You said old school.
Yeah, old school.
Yeah,
not
right.
Old person. Old
yeah,
school.
Somebody that voted for Trump.
I.e. an old school.
Yeah.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. So how long have you lived in Chicago?
I've lived in Chicago for over 30 years at least. Yeah. I grew up in Evanston. So even longer than that, really, in the area. I went to school in L.A. and then came back here. And I've been here for my entire professional career.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's about right.
Well, so then you probably... So, we've been talking a lot about... Well, mostly to opera makers, but people that work in Chicago, I feel like it's a really unique area for it, because you have a lot of people that are well-educated.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, rent is cheap, so there's a lot of, like, post-grads, like, people that aren't, like, Hollywood, but, like... Also very talented.
Yeah, compared to other cities, it's got the perfect mix of having an audience, a history, And real estate, as you yeah. pointed out. It's kind of like Nashville is for musicians.
Right.
Right? The people in, like, Nashville has the best underground music in the world because all the musicians are there, and they're mm-hmm. all waiting for their break, and they're all playing dive bars until then together.
Right.
Yeah.
So Chicago's non-equity theater is very much like that, where it's people who are here. You know, we got five top-notch theater schools empty, you know, just in the city alone, or mm-hmm. suburbs, emptying out into Chicago, as well as the whole Midwest coming this way, and you've got a huge amount of talent. And now they're starting to shoot TV shows here now, all the Chicago shows, Fire, PD,
what's up with
Justice,
that?
Chicago, I think Streets and Sand is next or something.
Streets and Sand?
I'm just kidding. Yeah. That's the one I hope they make.
Yeah.
Chicago Streets and Sand. But that's a way that actors can get paid. And then you can put on a show anywhere you want.
That's the amazing thing about it.
You just either rent a theater or rent some space and don't tell anybody about it like we're doing.
Yeah.
755 North Chicago, North Ashland Avenue. Or you just get somebody to let you into their bar for 2 hours, you know, and you put on a show anywhere. So you can produce theater here. Whereas in New York, you can't really, the real estate's prohibitive. You can't just mm-hmm. do it. You know, you do apartment theater.
There's a lot of entrepreneurial spirit here, which is really cool. And I think it comes from just like people from the Midwest being hard ass workers. And
also
like
true.
Also hustling true. We'll do anything to get for shit not much. Done. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we're working on right now, is that we're trying to get a summer concert series off of the ground.
There you go.
And right now, our production assistant and potential mind fucker, Emma, who may have told us that dinosaur bones are in our beer. is working on finding us a venue for it, and we're looking at churches, we're looking at you know random spaces, we're looking at restaurants, and like
totally look at the Lutheran Church on Foster and Damon.
Foster and Damon.
Yeah, there's also, what's the one on
just
Foster?
Maybe it's the same one with the 1850 Foster.
Like west of Ashland?
Yeah, between Ashland and
oh, is it between Damon. Ashland and Damon? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That place is great.
And they've got like this weird second sanctuary that people perform in. I saw Helena Handbag do a show there. I know Dance Theater Chicago has a residency there.
Helena Handbag did a show at a church?
Yes.
That's great.
And they rehearsed. I directed one of their shows last year? Year before last, and they rehearse in there too. They have a great relationship with that church. They're great. They really support the arts. I can't remember which saint it's named after, but it's a Lutheran church. That's right.
Yeah, there. I can never. I just know it. I can picture.
I kind of
want to
plug it right now, and I can't.
Yeah. Have it. Well, guys, find a church on Foster between Ashland
and
Damon.
1850 West Foster.
Yeah. Great.
Because that's where rehearsals were.
That's as solid of a plug as they'll get.
Yeah, but people will drive by the church. Oh, that must be the one.
Yeah, right.
Like 1848, 1850. That's the church.
That's the one. But yeah, I mean, that's our, you guys know, work with or as Third Eye.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the same spirit. You can put on an opera in any space you want if you rent the space.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group on called Nothing Without a Company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah, and they're
all of Rose's friends.
Yeah. Exactly. And so they're putting on shows wherever they want.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. Yeah. And you've mm-hmm. produced concerts literally in a hallway.
Well, so that's kind of where I'm coming to next, is because I'm interested in your take on this. So something I keep kind of circling back with certain people that we have on is all the great things we just talked about Chicago, to me, are balanced out. At least what I've found in things that I've produced and things that I've seen people produce, like close friends, is that your audience tends to be the same people that are making things. And they also tend to be low income. And so you kind of...
I'm nodding my head, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And maybe there isn't an answer to, like, making this work. But, like, it's just, like, what do we do? You know, like, and I'm super... ecstatic to hear about the run of shows that you did I mean, that's kind of the great thing about it, right? Is that you can do something small and it mm-hmm. can go really well, and you can sell out every night because...
Right. I'd rather sell out 40 seats than have a 300-seat theater with 100 people in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, because it's about energy, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of it. I mean, any of the live arts, as you know, is the last collaborator is the audience that comes in and right. how you play against them. I mean, unless you're at CSO, then you pretend they're not there. But
exactly. Yeah.
For everybody's usually, sake. The yeah. performed arts interact with the audience in some way or another. And you know, the drum show wouldn't have worked without the audience, because that style, the neo-comedian style, is all about direct eye contact with the audience. So everything you're doing is like shouting at the audience. Mm. So if they're not there, it's like, well, I'm just shouting at a chair.
What made yeah. you decide to make that? Did you guys conceive that devise that show, I mean?
Yeah. It was, we wrote it, devised it, and wrote it from scratch. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Loosed on the framework of the Brecht play,
that's right,
Rise
that's
of
right.
Arturo Uy. So it's about Trump's rise through the Republican to the Republican nomination, and how people just sort of could have stopped him and didn't at every single point that could have mm-hmm. happened. Everybody in the Republican establishment. It's basically we're lampooning the Republican establishment
yeah.
for
yeah.
letting Trump happen.
Yeah,
you know, with their for their own devices, and we have this great, really sad yet hilarious. Lindsey Graham doing Blanche DuBois' monologue from Streetcar Named Desire about how uncouth Stanley is, and it was just so obviously about Trump that it was just kind of hilarious. He was just like fanning himself. Why don't Stella? Don't hang back with the brutes. And he was Senator Lindsey Graham. So some stuff just sort of popped out and made itself self-evident like that. But yeah, it was so we used that loose structure, but then we wrote scenes, developed scenes within it, you know, as we workshopped in the style mm-hmm. That we performed in.
That's really, so what made you decide to do the Commedia style with that?
That has been a long time collaboration between my friend Sid Feldman, who's my partner in Conspirators, partner in Conspiracy, and I, we've been collaborating together in that style for, God, 15 years, to one extent or another. It had its roots in a theater company that it kind of lasted in the 90s in Chicago, New Crime, which was kind of spearheaded by Steve Pink and Jeremy Piven and John Cusack.
Okay.
Was their theater company.
And casual.
Yeah. Well, they're all high school classmates of Sid's, who then was kind of, you know, bringing it forward. And they studied, or I know Johnny went to France and studied with Ariane Mnouchkine, who's very innovative theater director in France, and came back and kind of developed this style with the Actors Gang in LA was the other piece of that, who I knew. I know all those guys from college. And so that style just lent itself to this very provocative, could only be done in the theatrical medium kind of style, you know, where it's not TV acting, it's not a play that would rather be a short story, it's not a play that would rather be a film, you know, it's like, it's theatrical. That's the whole point of it. So Sid and I have, you know, worked on shows in my previous company, Sliced Bread Productions, a long time ago, and then I directed a show for Babes with Blades that we did in that style, and you know, and Sid and I kind of like, you know, we should do this more because it's really unique. No one else does it, and yeah. It lends itself to a different kind of expression. And you know, really, it's fun to do. It's hard work, but it's fun to do. Mm. You know, there's never a dull moment when you're doing it, and it's yeah. fun to be in the middle of it. You know.
Did you use any of the Commedia characters, or did you come up
kind
with
kind of? Words? I mean, you have. I mean, the whole point of it is that there's the archetypes that you're yeah. doing. So you have the Pantalone, mm-hmm. who you know thinks he's smarter than everybody else. So you're still sending up those things.
Yeah.
But you're using really intense emotional states, but you only have four. Mm. So you have happy, sad, scared. Happy, sad, scared, or angry, I think, are the four. I'm well versed in it. And you have to come on stage doing those at an 11. So you're always like fuming, and then you change your state from really, really mad to, oh, I'm just so happy that you're, you know, and you're making eye contact with the audience, expressing all this stuff, and your makeup is weird and twisted, and your costumes are grotesque looking, and you're telling this really in-your-face story. Or you can improvise in that style too, because there's a very distinctive thing. All the movements are have percussion behind them. So you know, the person talking is facing the audience, and then he passes what we call passing the food to another, the other actor, and you hear the drum go muck, and then the other person's got the focus, and then he sends it back over to here. So yeah, it's very percussive like that. Yeah,
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say, because that's a big thing with Commedia too, is the very stark movements, yes, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we're not doing the body positions that are traditional since right. 1500s of like, oh, I can tell you're a Capitano by the way you're standing.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, you know, the actor develops a character based in like in a costume and workshop, a costume and makeup workshop. And so I think this is the character I'm doing. And then we kind of go, yeah, you know, you're kind of a Harlequin. You're kind of the Bugs Bunny of this scene. And it's, speaking of Bugs Bunny, it's very like a cartoon, like an old-fashioned cartoon. Things happen quickly and ridiculously.
Mm-hmm. Much like
the story we told.
Exactly.
Much like the rise
quick
of,
and ridiculous.
Of Herr Helmut Drumpf himself.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we don't shy away from politics here.
A door that could be opened with this week especially, I think. Which we definitely don't have to. Now, my main experience with Commedia is I did like a... With opera, you can do like abroad things for like a month and a half. So I was in Italy for a month and a half. And nice. We did Pagliacci. We didn't do the whole thing. We did just the Commedia scene. And the director, like the stage director, was some guy that they randomly hired. I think he was just trying to make a quick buck, but he was like German and like
it was weird.
So and like really, really poor English. And then we were all learning Italian, but he didn't really know Italian either. And so it was just kind of like a weird. It was really weird, and he was just like, "Yeah, just YouTube Commedia and figure it out." And it was just,
figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love it.
So well, that's
it's funny. I keep forgetting you guys are like opera people. So the show we did at Babes with Blades was a gender reversed Rigoletto.
Oh,
very cool.
Done in Commedia. So we did it in our neo Commedia style.
Oh.
Well, so the so other, one of the things I do is called Opera on Tap Chicago.
Oh,
we
yeah.
we do it out of bars and stuff. And we every year do a gender bender. Mm. So we do a bunch of, we basically have all of our singers do arias.
Is Rigoletto right? Is that the one?
The one with he's got like the hunchback.
Adonai mobile.
No, maybe it wasn't Rigoletto. Wait a minute, which was it? Oh, crap. Now I'm pulling out my phone.
Okay.
Yeah. Start naming key plot points of operas. We'll see how good we are.
Guy has a daughter that the doesn't want the prince to take.
Oh, no, that's
oh,
yeah, Rigoletto.
Okay, great. Yeah, 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 oh, thank yeah. God. Oh,
and
God.
He's
I'm not an idiot.
No.
Yeah, no, no, no.
So it was a woman who has a son, but everything, you know, it was a female, because Babes with Blades' mission is to create better roles for women and fighting roles for women. And so it was a gender reversed, not just bent, right. Rigoletto, yeah. So.
No, I love that, especially because Jill, the daughter, which would be a son in that situation, is like so stock, like no, like well, I don't know Gilda's character too well.
Oh, Gilda's a nightmare.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, it's a young lover. It's a young lover character
right.
from you know, it's the ingenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't always like to just like pick a character and go like, oh, that's just a poorly written woman. Because then sometimes you do that to someone that's like kind of fleshed out a little bit. Like it's a hard game to play. Like 1800 writers.
Gilda's not
okay,
fleshed out.
Good, good. Yeah.
she sees the Duke seducing another woman through a window, and then she's given the opportunity to like seek revenge on him, but instead she chooses to die for him.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she gets stabbed by a mezzo. And
aren't
put,
we all at one point in our lives stabbed
right?
by a mezzo?
Just yesterday, and put in a bag and sent in a canoe with her father, who then like in the middle of a lake opens up the bag thinking it's the dead Duke.
But instead it's my daughter.
It's my daughter.
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite
that's
operas.
That's kind of what happens. In it was called L'Imbecile, which is the idiot in French. So. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So we did that in the style, and it worked because of the very theatrical subject matter. You know, it's not something that it would lend itself to realistic acting.
Well, and also Rigoletto is like a fool.
Right.
So
it was perfect. So she was kind of the Arlecchino of the Harlequin of the show and as the archetypes, and then the queen who was the Duke in the opera, very much the you know, hero, the Capitano. So it was, it worked well.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wish that there was more Commedia, use of good Commedia in opera. Just because it's so it's so dramatic, and it's so, like, it's such a strong choice, and I...
Well, it was very interesting, because Rose was directing a project for a while, Rose Freeman, the director that we all know, and she actually brought me in to do a comedy workshop with her singers, which was a very interesting thing, because, you know, it just got everybody out of their head, and out of the score, and just did some stuff. You know, did some theatrical stuff that was just very basic, had rules you could follow, and then be creative out of those rules. And so it was a very interesting crossover. I haven't asked her how that turned out in the production, but it was kind of cool to do that.
I'd imagine it helps, because I get the feeling that when you're, as a performer, once you start getting comfortable with, like, the big gestures, that's when you can start understanding how big a small gesture needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, yeah. As, like, and it also... I feel like as singers, we are first taught how to, like...
Ignore the stage director? Have an... yes. A joke.
Yeah. No, I think that we're first taught how to sing, and then if there's time, we're taught how to perform. And yes. I think that Commedia is a really good tool, and also not just a tool, but a really beautiful art form, but an excellent method of, like... teaching people how to be silly and teaching people how to be big, which is something that, like, the opera singer is not.
It's a system like any other, like your music system, right? And so it's a series of things you can do that express certain things. It can be very technical if you want.
Yeah.
And then you can transcend that technicality and it be really artistic.
And we're really good
very
at
much
that.
Like singing. Yeah, exactly. And so it's easier to figure, because it's not so psychological as what we, in America, you know, our realistic acting. I just did the finger quotes thing again.
We call that podcast gold.
Podcast
we do it all
gold.
The time. Yeah. Anything visual that we do is like podcast gold.
Yeah.
Nice. But like realistic acting makes you think psychologically and makes you, you know, you can't be in your head when you're singing because the score will keep going. Right? So you can't stop and go, I wonder what I feel about that. So stylistic stuff like Commedia or Neo-Commedia is just very, you know, it's just a series of tropes that you can just throw in there, and this means this, and this means this, and these gestures mean certain things, and, you know, you back it up, because the music is also carrying you emotionally, hopefully.
Nice.
So, yeah, no, you're right, there's not enough Commedia.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, so I have a coming back to JCS DIYMC.
Nice!
It's okay.
On the top, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. I sing professionally. No. So,
your diction was admirable.
Thank you. No. So coming from a mind that clearly like can work really well with form and structure and arc and stuff like that, when you come to something that can be so variety-based, like it's what seems like Jesus Christ Superstar, Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex is.
Very much. It is a variety, yes.
Do you have a hard time fighting against that urge to be like, I want this to make sense from moment zero to moment 60? Or do you like just have to like let chaos be your guide?
Well, it's intentionally chaotic.
Yeah.
So in very much like the Conspirators Commedia shows, it's very much you set up a structure. I mean, the Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex has a very set structure. We're playing the album in order.
Do you pause it at all?
Well, to turn the vinyl over. Yes.
Yes.
Good for you.
And then there's an intermission kind of in the between the two records. So, you know, it's got a very structured. There's rules. Say, if you want to be in it, you got to do that. Pick a song. Give me your three best songs, and I'll give you the one that other people don't want or whatever. And then everyone goes away and rehearses the stuff themselves. But they come back, and we just do it in order. And I sort of, you know, put glue between the things as kind of an MC character. But honestly, the best part is you set up the structure and then release and just let it be chaotic. Because the structure will out in the end.
Yeah.
You know, it just keeps the same with the Neo-Commedia. We jam, we really work on the stuff. We rehearse the style. We workshop it a lot. And then the audience comes in, and if your wig falls off, it's real. It has to. It's happening in space right now. So we're going to improvise off of that. But you've been trained enough in the structure and in the form that it's the funniest thing that ever happened in the universe. Mm-hmm. You know, because the wig comes off. Then you have a lot so you develop because they're picking up the wig, and then I step on it, and it just becomes this thing because you have that structure in there, and you know that there's a way back into the plot. Okay, great. What were you telling me? Oh yes, Senator Christie, the blah 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 is just the wall is going up, great, or whatever. You know, whatever the line was in the show. But you can take a break out and you're not under, oh my God, I just ruined the show. But the structure then pulls you back in. So I'm not, I don't mind letting go of it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I love
the
chaos.
Do you guys rehearse the thing or is it just night of?
The superstar thing?
Yeah.
No, night of. People will rehearse their individual things if they have something they have planned. Mm-hmm. They'll practice their song or they'll you know, write a little script or they'll do it and they'll get two friends together. But I have no knowledge of what they're doing.
That's what I was just going to ask. Yeah. So you have no idea.
No, I mean, they tell me what their technical needs are and I kind of ask them, tell me, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah.
That way I can sort of say, okay, I'm not going to give you another one because that's going to be boring. So I'm not going to give you a second one or whatever. I won't say that out loud. And actually in this case, that never happened that way. Podcast gold. but there's a certain amount of curating and I'll say, okay, great. Well, that sounds cool. And I don't want to have three of these type of things stuck together. So maybe I'll, you know, give you your second choice so that person can sing there, you know? So there's a little bit of that kind of thing going on, but honestly, I'll be pleasantly surprised. And the last two DIYs we did, it's just turned out as someone says, well, I'm going to play Pinball Wizard and I'm really good on guitar. Okay, great. So Scott Oaken came in and did that, the artistic director of the Factory Theater, with the manager director of the Factory Theater, Carrie Sullivan, on playing the bass line on tuba. And they just sort of played the song, and they played Pinball Wizard, and I was like, yes, okay, great. And I didn't need to listen to them rehearse it, you know, so it was really awesome. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see how it turns out. But the last two times, it was a great time. So it can't be anything else but listening to the album and drinking wine. You know, what would be the worst case scenario is that we listen to the album of Jesus Christ Superstar and drink wine.
Yeah.
So.
That sounds so fucking
really,
fun.
You really can't fail it.
Yeah, cool. Now that's the, nailing a performance that can't fail is pretty good.
Well, and then you get a chance, and then so you have that low expectation, or not, just your basic expectation. I know I'm listening to the album and drinking wine. It's going to be fun with a bunch of friends. And then those transcendent moments come out where you go, oh my God, that throwdown fight between Jesus and Judas over the table was amazing. You know, and you just unexpectedly amazing. Yeah. So those things then are the things that shine.
So do you have any plan? What's next for the Conspirators?
Well, we're talking about doing another show this fall. We're in negotiations of possibly reviving the Herr Helmut Drumpf. We'd have to recast. A bunch of actors are not available, but that might happen in a venue that I won't name until it comes true.
It's a shame, though, because there's not much material now.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, we decided we had to stop history at a certain point because every day up into the election and beyond, as we know, Trump would come up with new shit. And so it's like, well, no, we're going to tell this story.
Right.
We may allude to certain things that come up, you know, okay, we're going to have to call attention to this horrible thing because it's there, but we're telling that one story in time. And we probably revive it doing it that same thing, like, you know, shaming the people who could have stopped this. This is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that mid-season thing falls through, we may develop an entirely new show for the fall, but I think we're going to do something in the fall. That's what we're shooting for.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And if not, another DIY.
Yeah.
What's on your DIY bucket list?
There have been so many great suggestions. I've been thinking about DIY Ziggy.
That'd be
so
cool.
That's not technically a rock opera, but it does have a story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's songs everybody knows.
The Wall.
There has been the DIY Wall has been discussed.
The DIY Wall. I love The Wall. Oh
yeah.
Oh, my God.
I actually saw Vaudzilla do an entire burlesque night of The Wall. Like, I think they did every track.
Oh, my God.
A different burlesque number for each track, which was amazing. That's kind of part of my influence for these things, too. So The Wall is out there. Do Your Own Hair was another one we thought of.
That would be great.
Yeah, and then maybe having them in rotation because it's different every time, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the thing I would love to do is do Jesus Christ Superstar every year on this Easter thing, and then later in the year do a second one, but I don't know what. You know, maybe rotate those around.
Yeah.
Between The Wall or Hair or Ziggy Stardust or something else. I don't know.
Nice.
Some people are like mentioning actual musicals. I don't know if I'm into that. Mm. I don't know if I want to do a DIY.
Like Hairspray. Hair,
yeah.
No,
yeah.
I think the thing that's great about it is that there is a recording of it. You know,
right. Like
that there is this the exists. Whole. Yeah. Right.
I like taking the idea of the rock opera album because it's not performed. It's recorded to kind of evoke a performance. They made the album of Jesus Christ Superstar to kind of pitch it.
Yeah.
You know, you think this would work in a movie or on stage? I don't know. So they just made the album and they go, yep, it works. And then they made the movie and the stage
and
show.
That's with Ted Neely, right?
The movie's with Ted Neely. Yeah.
What's the recording?
The recording is Ian Gillan, I think his name is, who is the lead singer of Deep Purple.
Oh.
Does the album. Yeah.
Deep Purple. I haven't thought about Deep Purple. My across the street neighbor growing up was absolutely obsessed
yeah,
with Deep Purple.
Yeah, so they
Purple.
Got a big name playing that part. And then the guy who played Judas on the album was the guy who ended up doing Chess on Broadway.
Josh Groban?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well done. Well played, too.
I wish that that was a joke. I wish that I
did. No, the original Chess.
Yeah.
When Josh Groban was two.
That's right. I'm sorry.
One, you know that famous song, One Night in Bangkok.
I was in a production of Chess.
The recorded version of that song is the guy who played Judas on Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, cool.
The one that carries over is Yvonne Elliman, who happened to be Robert Stigwood's girlfriend. So she is on the album and in the movie and in the Broadway production.
Yeah, jeez.
Sorry, I have a childhood thing with Chess that my grandma, not childhood, I was in college, I must have been, because she was like, oh, you sing opera. So she recorded the Josh Groban, because it was only one performance, and so now I just always think of him with Chess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
But she was like, you gotta hear this, like, you would love this.
I love that
now
show.
Now it's driving me crazy, like, who is the dude?
I was an arbiter's girl in Chess.
Oh, yeah? Mm.
I was, yeah. It was in this. It was with this tiny theater company in Milwaukee called Off the Wall Theater.
Mm. Murray Head.
Murray
Head plays Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar album and also starred in Chess when it first came out.
Was he the arbiter?
I guess. I don't know that show.
I think that...
I'm not into musicals at
that's
all.
That's fair. No, that's
I'm
fair.
I'm totally not into musicals.
I mean,
which
me
is
neither.
Really funny. Because I'd do anything to do a rock opera, but I will not do a musical. Please keep me away.
I'm with you there. I would do weird musicals when I was in high school, and then I got into opera, and I kind of haven't looked back.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Good. Yeah, I mean, there are musicals like West Side Story that I go, okay, yes, undeniably, this is a great artwork.
Yeah.
Great work of art. You know, that's genius. But I don't need to see another Once Upon a Mattress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple minutes left. So the last thing we always like to do with our guest is a 1-minute plug of just like an upcoming event or anything. Or you can talk about, you know, shout out another company that's doing good work or like favorite TV show, favorite movie, anything.
I can just plug anything?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to read the postcard I have in my pocket.
Nice.
I just opened a show at the Factory Theater, which of which I'm an ensemble member, called Born Ready.
Cool.
By Stacey Barrow. It's a great play about the early 50s television. It's the reviewers have been saying things like you feel like you're there. It really is. Windy City Times said we were museum accurate with placing it in that place. There's song, there's dance, there's TV, there's intrigue. It's about it's kind of a backstage intrigue genre. So it's kind of all about Eve and kind of Sunset Boulevard in a lot of places. It's about trying to make it as a woman, an ambitious woman in the 50s when everything is stacked against you. So I really do want to plug Factory Theater's Born Ready. 1623 West Howard Street. You can go www.thefactorytheater.com if you want to look at tickets. There's a reader review out there you can Google.
For something that you had to pull out of your pocket, that was a pretty solid plug, I gotta say.
Well, I've been living this thing. We just opened it two weeks ago, and so I've been living this thing. And then, of course, do come to the Jesus Christ Superstar Do-It-Yourself Messiah Complex. It's donation-based. It's fun. It's going to be a gathering of enthusiasts and artists that's going to be a fun thing.
We might blow off my family's Easter for that.
Well, you would be honored guests. And if you have a favorite song, I'd probably let you sing it.
I mean,
yeah. What is your favorite song? What would you guys do if you were tapped to do a song in Jesus Christ Superstar?
I mean, I would have to bring my ukulele and sing "I Don't Know How to Love Him," a la seventh grade.
Aww. Wasn't the one that's really...
I don't know how to love him.
Should I bring him down?
It's a jam on the uke. I gotta admit. I'm not even gonna be humble about it. No, I like grunt because I was a guitar player first. Oh,
power chords. Power uke.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's what I play. I play power uke.
Really? No. Picturing him plugged in.
No, there are electric ukes out there. I would get an electric uke. Anyway, I did.
Is that one ticketed?
Yes. Yeah, you get it. You go to the website factorytheater.com and you get tickets. Yeah, this is a different. This is a theater company that I'm a member of. That they've been around for 25 years, and I've always loved their work. Cool. People ask me, "Who are your theatrical influences?" And I say, "Well, I'd say Shakespeare and Brecht and the Carol Burnett Show." Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the aesthetic there. It's very, you know, very rough and ready and immediate, and you know. And all original plays written by ensemble members. So I guess I got to start writing now that I'm a member.
And a lot of ear tugging.
A lot of ear tugging. No, yeah. But that idea where you try to break somebody up, where you get to the edge of the performance there, and you can see the actors are fucking with each other. That's like my favorite thing in the world. So I've acted in three shows over there, none of which wearing pants, oddly.
Well, you know.
For three different reasons, which is really cool.
Sounds comfortable.
Yes. But also
you've got a calling, you know.
But now as a director, now that as a company member, I'm able to direct there, and it's been a dream come true. So Born Ready is a great show.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool.
Here's a postcard.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, my God.
We heard it. That picked up, too.
Good. Excellent. Yes.
Podcast goal. Cool. So thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with us, there's a ton of ways to do that. The first is head over to scopymag.com. That is our website. You can find articles there that have been written by us and by others. You can also find a list of podcast episodes there. It'll link you to somewhere where you can hear it. You can head over to Facebook, Scopy Magazine. You can see all of our posts there. I still have that. The last week and a half, I think that'll still be going on on Mondays. I've been posting just old photography that I'd taken of Chicago when I was wandering around and in grad school.
Just to be present.
Yeah. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at ScopyMag. We love to hear from people there.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a zero budget, but we would love to have that always be the case.
You wouldn't know it. This gold-plated room is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you. We actually just found it. We're squatting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Because
the servant told me I could have all the champagne I wanted.
I don't, you know, we can't get him to leave. It's weird. It's the damnedest thing. Yeah. So we would love to upgrade our audio setup. We'd love to have more than two mics. We'd love to have a box that could accommodate more than two mics.
Mm-hmm. A cardboard box.
Yeah, just a box.
Yeah, anything that can hold two mics in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, really nice. But we can't do that without your help because we're poor. You can head to scopymag.com. There are donation buttons littered all over our website. I've made it incredibly easy for you to donate. If you become a monthly subscriber, two things will happen. First of all, we will give you a shout out on the show. Second of all, today is Monday, which, by the way, if you're listening to this on Monday, it's my birthday. And if you become a monthly subscriber today before midnight, we will literally be sitting at a bar counting that down. Then we will send your first month's donation as a donation to Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. So please do that. It will help us. It will help ladies. And, and if you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten thank you note in the mail, which I will be much quicker at once I buy some stamps. Nice. Give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thank you again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.
Yeah, like I did.